Welcome. Today is the 24th of March 2009, and this is our first get-together since coming back from our six-week trip, a couple of weeks in Australia, and a few weeks in India. And apart from being in the sunshine for almost daily, which was very pleasant, at least for me, it was a trip of great rejuvenation, inspiration, and a spiritual connection. Everything on our trip kind of went like clockwork. Everything worked with little or no difficulty, I'd have to say, the whole time. And of course, we didn't so much calculate our departure time as more the particular day. And we left on a day and made sure our fellow pilgrims left on a similar day where the moon was in Sagittarius. And Sagittarius being the sign of Dharma or spirituality, the natural ninth position in a chart, that is the sign that represents spiritual pilgrimage or anything that you want to do under the banner of spirituality. So it went very, very well. And I think we pretty much realized our objective. When going to India for a spiritual pilgrimage, there are different categories that this falls under, or different ways that this could take place. You could do, as I explained to Catherine when we were actually on the trip, you could do the ashram tour, where you go and you stay in an ashram or various ashrams, and you practice yoga and meditation. Many, many people do that. Or you can practice yoga and meditation under the guidance of a guru. Also, you know, connected to an ashram generally. Or you can do the sacred places tour, where you could go to a lot of different sacred places, including places like the Ganges. India is filled with sacred places. What do we mean by sacred places? These are places in which very powerful spiritual events have taken place in the past. Not even necessarily this yuga. Not necessarily the age in which we live, but dating back thousands, hundreds of thousands of years historically. But these places are surcharged with spiritual energy because sometimes incarnations of God have come there, or very elevated souls, sages, holy people, etc. People practicing spiritual practices, tapas, meaning austerities, penances, for, you know, a time for many, many days on end or years on end. That energizes such places. Or you could do the temple tour, which is the one we did, which is visiting existing, established temples. And the temples are dedicated to various forms of the Vedic pantheon. I hesitate to say the Hindu pantheon, although the Hindu pantheon of gods and the Vedic pantheon of gods are the same. But there's a big difference in my approach to it than in a Hindu approach to it. Well, I don't practice Hinduism. I don't teach people about practicing Hinduism. and teach them about practicing Sanatana Dharma, the eternal religion, which is service to God. So, anyway, the temples are the same. Yeah, it's just the attitude and the approach that would be different. So we visited primarily many, many temples of Vishnu. Vishnu is God. Vishnu means he who lives everywhere, who's all-pervasive. That's God by definition. And at Vishnu temples, you will find various other manifestations of Vishnu, like Nrisinga, half-man, half-lion incarnation, like Vamana, the dwarf Brahman incarnation, like, who else did we see? Like Rama, the incarnation of... How are you? Good to see you. Rama is the incarnation of policy. He's a king or a prince. So he's the enlightened leader. And Hanuman is connected to Ram. Hanuman is half son of the wind god, monkey mother. So he's got the monkey form. And what else did we see? Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, is Vishnu's wife. So she's at most of these temples. We visited many of her shrines. Also, Bhumi, the earth goddess. And that's Vishnu's other wife. So he's married to the goddess of fortune and the goddess of the earth, according to the South Indian tradition. So these shrines were there. And then we went to several Shiva temples, most of which they wouldn't let us in.
Why is
that? Because we're non-Hindu. Technically, they were right. We're non-Hindu. There's still a holdover from the days when the Muslims would tear the temples down and smash all the deities. So even that, even though it was a few hundred years ago, the memory hasn't entirely faded away. And seeing as how the Muslims are busy doing that even today, whenever they get a chance, they blew up that Buddha in Afghanistan, the one that was like 3 stories tall, carved out of a rock. That was like a couple of years ago. So they have to be very careful. And there's terrorism rampant going on at every turn these days. So that's why they have to be careful. Shiva, who is connected inextricably to material creation and manifestations, he's also the god of destruction of the material creation. Brahma being the creator, Vishnu the maintainer, Shiva the destroyer, which is the Trinity. There are many, many temples to Shiva. Shiva is easily pleased, and people who worship Shiva get results very, very quickly, generally. You may have seen the form in which they typically worship Shiva is a lingam, which is a phallus, is what it looks like. And that's the form that Shiva is typically worshipped in. So it's what it is a personification of creative energy. And most of the Shiva temples would have a lingam as the focal point of worship. And then drawn on the lingam are the 3 lines that go across, which is indicative of Shiva, the marking sacred to Shiva. People who practice yoga would worship Shiva more often than not.
Yes, they do actually. Why is that?
Because Shiva is a yogi,
mm-hmm.
and he's a tapasvi. It means he practices very, very severe and difficult austerities and privations, like not eating, not sleeping, living on air. And, you know, doing various kinds of difficult austerities. So Shiva is very dear to the yogis. There's only one temple in the, what to speak of, in India, in the world, where Shiva is in his form of the Nataraj, the king of the dance, where you see this pose of Shiva and the arms are this way and the foot's over that way. Then this is a real classic pose. That's the only temple in the world where Shiva is worshipped in that form.
They've copied more recent temples. They've put a deity in like that in more modern temples.
Oh yeah, okay, fine. But not
in the West.
In the traditional temple. So we were allowed into that one. So that was a treat, and we were actually invited right up onto the altar right next to the deity. For those of you who aren't aware, God is present everywhere. God is here. And God manifests in three forms: energy, diversity, and personality. And these are each successively higher forms. When you don't see God, well, then you don't see any of it. Your first level of appreciating God is on the energetic level, when you can perceive or feel the divine energy moving around you and through you. The next level is diversity, meaning that you know God is present in your heart as the super soul. And God is present in the heart of everyone else, so that you can see God in everyone and everything. Which is a real tough one to do, because then you have to treat people as if God is present in their heart, because that changes the playing field completely. Because then you have to be respectful to everyone, regardless of who they are and what their affiliation may be. Very tough one to do. And then the highest level is hanging out with God himself, face to face, as we are sitting here face to face, looking and talking with each other. So those are the three levels at which God is experienced. So because you cannot see God, it's hard for us to imagine God simply as an energy. We can imagine it, but how do you interact with it? It's hard to interact with an energy. So even in the Bhagavad Gita, the song of God spoken by Krishna to Arjuna, Arjuna says to him, well, what are all the ways in which people can realize you? And he goes, no, there's this way and this way and this way and that way and that way. So many ways. And he's, one of the ways is seeing or perceiving the energy, spiritual energy, Brahman. In Catholicism, it's called the Holy Ghost. The Holy Spirit pervades everything. It's the same energy. Well, how do you interact with the Holy Spirit? It's not that easy. So he says that God, because God is unlimited by definition, can take any form he likes. So if God, as you see on the altar, there's God. That's a mantelpiece, but that's our functional altar there. And God takes these forms. And God can enter into, well, isn't God in everything? So God is, by the same token, in these forms. So the benefit of these forms is one can remember God, think of God, they remind you of God, and you can worship God through these forms. You can render service. You can offer a prayer. You can offer a candle, some incense, a flower, fruit, to God through these forms. So God can enter into a piece of wood, a piece of clay, marble, whatever. So that is the understanding according to Vedic knowledge, yoga knowledge. So that's why you go to the temple, to see God in these forms. The temples that we went to are very, many of them are very, very famous temples. Some of them have been there for hundreds of years, maybe longer. And a place that a lot of people worship at over a period of many, many years becomes surcharged. And some of the places that we visited, when you go, you can put that there, carry it. When you go to the inner sanctum, the energy is palpable. You could almost cut it with a knife in some of these places. It's such powerful energy. And the whole point also of going there is to, what it does is it removes heaps of negative karmic reaction. And it purifies the being. It purifies the soul. It removes some of the covering that's obfuscating the soul. We don't have to become realized beings or spiritual beings. We are, in actuality, already spiritual beings. We don't have to become something. We are it. But we've forgotten, because we are covered by layers of ignorance, maya, illusion, forgetfulness, ego, darkness. Call it what you like, any combination of the above. And the soul is obscured. So you forget what you are. And then you become conditioned to the material world, material life, material body. You think you're an Irish woman. Well, on one level, you are. On another level, it has nothing to do with anything, because you're a soul, transcendental or above, being an Irish woman. An Irish woman is practical, and it's a frame of reference, but it's not ultimately who you are. Because you'll only be an Irish woman up until the point that you die, and you'll cease being that. But you'll continue to be an eternal being, a soul. So when we begin to identify with the soul, then we're not hung up on the fact that we're an Irish woman, or a Canadian man, or a British soldier, or whatever the case may be. We begin to transcend that. So that's the whole point. And as we, when you go to, when you go on a pilgrimage, when you spend time in thought, prayer, meditation, going to such places, it really lifts a lot of that shadow and a lot of that darkness and misidentification. So I know for me it was a really enlivening trip, so I'm hoping it was for everyone else as well. A note on the economy. I've been trying to get out the next newsletter. I haven't been trying hard enough, but I'm still, it'll be out soon. The sun has now moved into Pisces, in the sky. That begins the Vedic year. When the sun and moon join together in Pisces on the new moon night or new moon day, that begins the official starting date of the lunar year, according to Vedic astrological understanding. So that's, when did that happen? Just like
today,
yesterday, tomorrow. Well, where is the moon today?
It's a new moon on Thursday.
There you go. New moon Thursday. So 2 days from now, that's your start date. Yeah. This also begins the year for all the different countries and governments. So it officially begins the political year, if you will, as well. And this is where it's really going to hit the fan, I think. And I'd already written about that in a couple of articles that are posted on the website under planetary events. One is the 2009, the gathering clouds, and one is Jupiter enters Capricorn. So Jupiter enters Capricorn has already begun a few months ago. 2009, the gathering clouds begins Thursday. Hasn't even begun yet.
Sorry, can I just say, I just lost 4 jobs in the past week, so I knew that there was something really weird going on at the moment. The gathering crowds is already happening, it seems, for me.
Yeah. These are going to be very intense times.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly don't revel in the fact that people will be suffering and lose jobs, money, and various other things in their lives. But we've come to such a place of utter illusion when it comes to money, materialism, the economy, what's important in life, what defines us. We have become overwhelmed with greed, which is reflected in our financial system. It went so far beyond people issuing loans for people who needed loans so they could have a house or build a house. It went into all these complicated financial maneuvers, hedge funds, and I don't remember all the names of the different things that everybody's hedging a bet. I'll buy your paper and then I'll sell your paper to this guy and I'll sell this to this and this to that. And all this paper is moving around, and if this guy doesn't pay the monthly payment, and you get a few people that don't do that, then the whole thing starts falling apart. Obviously, that's an oversimplified way to describe it, but that's what's happening. We have a lot of people in positions of power, authority, and trust who cannot be trusted, who don't know what they're doing. My spiritual master, who left the planet in 1977, but was here long enough to make the impact, he said, "What is this government you're putting forth? Democracy?" He said, "This is nothing but a demoncracy, full of demons who are in it for their own self-aggrandizement." Is the first thing in a government is the king, the leader. What is the qualification for a king? A king is trained from childhood how to be a king or a queen, how to rule, how to lead, how to govern, how to manage people, how to manage money, how to manage the military, how to see to the welfare of the people. The king is dedicated to the welfare of the people.
There have been plenty of corrupt kings, though, in history.
There have been, no doubt. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about people who are elected to office and what is their qualification. What's the qualification? I want to run for office. Oh, and what is your qualification? Well, they don't have one. And what will you do if you get elected? I'll do A, B, C, D, E. And they get elected and they do hardly anything they said they would do. The other thing the king is supposed to be able to do is to fight, is to lead the troops in battle. Kings do their best not to ever have to go into the military. At least the British still have that tradition. So, well, how can you send people into battle when you yourself won't go? What kind of leader is that? Where's the courage? Where's the heroism? Where's the strength? Where's the leading by example? I think these are all valid points. So anyway, you end up with a cast of characters known as a government. And this is the state we're in. This is where we find ourselves. So the blessing in all of this is it must fall apart. It has to fall apart. Well, when's it going to fall apart? Well, 2009 is a perfect time, astrologically speaking, for it to fall apart. What?
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. Now's the time for it to fall apart.
The day after tomorrow.
Well, it's not going to do it the day after tomorrow. It's just, this is the window for
so
the coming year.
Do you see God in the demonic, that's, I find that's a challenge.
Well, in the spirit, there's the spiritual world and there's the material world. Guess where we live?
Material.
Correct. In the spiritual world, by definition, God is the center. And everybody serves God. Happily, blissfully, with fulfillment in a loving exchange. That's the spiritual world. Then you wake up one day and you say, you know, God, this is not working for me. You know, I don't really want to serve you anymore. It seems like you get all of the credit and you're the center of attention. Oh, that doesn't work for you anymore? No, no problem. I'll give you what's known as an ego, since you're developing one anyway. And there's a place where you can go, where you can lord it over. You can become the center of your world. You can become the center of your universe. Or at least, you know, give it a shot, knock yourself out. So that's what this is here. This place is where people come to lord it over and to fulfill their desires without the inconvenience of having God at the center. So instead of having God at the center, we can put Catherine will put Catherine at the center. No offense to you, Catherine. And Colette will put Colette at the center. And Drew's been busy putting Drew at the center for the longest time, etc. And you're dealing with a world of egomaniacs or egocentrics. That's the problem. That's what's creating the problem. God has nothing to do with this in the sense that the material creation is like God winding up a clock. You wind the clock, and then what do you do with the clock? You forget about it, don't you? And it unwinds, and time goes round. Right? Until it needs to be wound again. Same idea. So, and there are certain rules and principles that apply. Gravity is one. You must have noticed that one. Death is another. Old age, disease, birth, death, gravity. They all apply. Karma is another. What you sow, you reap. What you do has every action has a subsequent reaction. So it has nothing to do with God, what happens here. He only allows it to happen. Well, why would he allow such things? Because you demanded it. You said you wanted it. So he can't have you carrying on in this manner up in the spiritual world. It wouldn't do. Because you'd make a mess of everything. Just like you've done down here.
If you're up in the spiritual world and you don't have an ego, how does an ego creep in?
Don't know.
Yeah, it's almost like there's a curiosity there of...
Yeah, I don't know how that happens. But we're here.
Yeah.
That we know. Now, some like to say that different souls need different kind. The God likes to expand himself in so many millions of different forms so that he can come to know himself and realize himself in all of these ways and potentials. That might be part of it too. Don't know. But, you know, the Catholic Church calls it original sin. Original sin is like, what was your first mistake? Your first mistake, you know, the whole allegory, and I believe it's an allegory of Adam and Eve. It's the same idea. Adam and Eve are in the Garden of Eden. Everything they need is there. Nobody's bothering them. They're running around nude. Everything's great. And they have one rule. One rule. Don't eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That tree right there. Just don't eat apples from that tree. You see all these other thousands of apple trees and every fruit you can imagine? Eat as much as you like. Just avoid that one. How hard can that be? But no, got to try that one. The tree of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil means duality. Oh, take a buddy out. Oh, now we'll find out what duality is all about. There's your first mistake. The original sin, the original mistake is that he ended up here. Now, whether you believe Adam and Eve or, I mean, it's a great story. It's a wonderful metaphor.
I think the Catholics were very clever because they seem to have taken a lot from yoga philosophy.
I think the Catholics took a lot from a lot of different philosophies.
Yeah, exactly. And just open their own language and through guilt.
Yeah, well, guilt is what the Church uses to control you. And it's never worked better than it has in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So, I shouldn't say that. It works pretty good in Israel, too, come to think of it.
Is this interesting?
Yeah. Well, Jewish people have a very strong embedded guilt. I know I've thousands of Jewish clients and many, many Jewish friends, and there's a whole mentality that goes in guilt. Guilt is really a trigger with Jewish people. As it is with Irish people, you know, as a race. Yeah. But Irish, I think it largely came about through the church. You know, I wonder how much guilt would be an issue here if the church hadn't arrived. You know. Anyway, we're here. This is the point. We're here. You have free will. No one forces you to do anything. What forces you to behave in a certain way is your conditioning, your material conditioning. That comes about from past actions, from your heredity, from your family conditioning, from your cultural conditioning, your educational conditioning, your professional conditioning. That's where it comes from. So, if you've ever squeezed out a single original thought in your life, congratulations. Because most people haven't. They haven't. In order to have a single true original thought, you will have to have questioned every single thing you were told from the beginning of your life. I didn't say you had to disagree with it. I said you had to question it. You must question it. Is this true for me? My mom told me this. Is this true for me? My dad said this. Is this true for me? My dad, God bless him, hated anybody that was foreign. Anybody who wasn't Canadian, my dad hated them. I said, well, why do you hate them, Dad? Oh, really? Okay. Well, your father was an immigrant, Dad. What's that got to do with it? You know. So, whatever you're taught, and then, do you believe that or not? Well, even as a child, I came to the conclusion that that couldn't be possibly be right. That all foreigners are bad, or there's a problem with them, or you shouldn't get to know them, or you shouldn't embrace them, or they had nothing to offer, or they were stealing all our money, or whatever they were doing. You know. So you didn't listen. You figured it out. So that's what you have to do in every area of your life. If Catholicism is for you, wonderful. If your heart is there and you're connected to God through practicing Catholicism, wonderful. But if you're just doing it because you were told to do it, and that's the tradition, and we were all raised Catholic, I was too, then you better at least take a look at it before you decide on it. So everything has to be looked at like that. You won't have an original thought. If that makes sense to you, what I'm saying, how many people have had an original thought? That isn't influenced by your conditioning.
I think you have original thoughts when you're meditating, no?
Sometimes, sure. Why not?
So, are you saying that by just simply questioning these things is an original thought?
If they say, I don't know, what's an example?
Original thought would be like a revelation.
Yeah. It's that something, it's a thought that no conditioning has, it's a product, it's not a product of any conditioning.
It's a realization.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a realization. It's a revelation. It doesn't come from your upbringing. I'm not saying that some of the things you learned weren't of value. I didn't say that. But you have to decide whether they're true for you. You can't just accept them blindly. This is the point. Most people accept it blindly. What is a midlife crisis? A guy grows up, he goes to school, he graduates. He's told to go to school, he's told to study such and such in university. He graduates, he goes into the workforce. He's told he needs such and such a job. Now you better get yourself a wife, squeeze out a few kids, get a house, one or two cars, and off we go. He doesn't question it, he just does it. And then 40 comes around, 40, 45, and he has a meltdown. Why? Because for the first time in his life, he's questioning, what am I doing?
Why do they start questioning when they're 40? What is the thing about
it? Because it only occurs to them at that time.
But what happens in a cycle of life at 40?
Well, no, I started questioning at 19.
Exactly.
It depends on who you are and what the reality is. People question when they question. Some people will have the revelation at 70. Some will have it on their deathbed. Some will never have it in their entire life.
But is there any connection with that age?
No, I mean, I'm just using that as an example of a midlife crisis. People have the so-called midlife crisis, you know. And the joke is that the middle-aged guy goes out and gets himself a Porsche and a hot chick, and he reverts to his teenage years when he was happy-go-lucky and carefree and he didn't have all these responsibilities on his head. Nothing wrong with responsibilities, but it took him that long to question things. That's all we're saying. Midlife crisis is. Does there have to be a midlife crisis? No. You don't have to have it. But if you're not honest with yourself, if you haven't followed your heart, then if you've only been following what you've been told to follow, do as you're told. Do as you're told. Just do as you're told. Then sooner or later, you're going to discombobulate. You have to. Because one day you're going to wake up and you go, why am I doing this? Oh, well, there's a question. Why are you doing it? Because so-and-so said that so-and-so said that so-and-so said that that's what we're supposed to do. Nothing wrong with being married and having children. I'm not criticizing any of that. It's whether it's for you or not. You know how many women say, well, you know, all my girlfriends, they're all got married having babies, so I got to get married and have a baby now. Or I won't be part of, you know, they don't invite me anymore. Now, you know how many times I've heard that? Hundreds of times. So they go get pregnant or get married or, you know, get some guy totally inappropriate for them, throw a rope around them, and live happily ever after for a year or two. So it's about being conscious. It's about questioning. It's about understanding. You don't have to be like everybody else. Or you can be like everybody else. It doesn't matter. It's what works for you. But don't be like everybody else just because. Be like people in certain ways that work for you. And don't be like them in other ways that don't work for you. Be honest with yourself. So anyway, a little off the point here. The point was, how does God let all this happen? because he lets you do what you feel you need to do. Sometimes you have a friend, or if you have a child, your own child, and sometimes your friend or your child, they got to work through some stuff and they got to go out into the world and they've got to do really stupid stuff. And they've got to implode and, create big problems for themselves. Do you want that for them? No. And sometimes you'll say, it's not the best idea for you to do that. Why don't you take a hike and leave me alone? What do? You take a hike and you leave them alone. Knowing full well what's going to happen. Right? Mm-hmm. So what do you think God did? He took a hike. And he left you to your own devices. Because you wouldn't listen anyway. If God's in your heart, and you can listen to God, you can tune in anytime you want, and you don't, what's that about? I'm busy watching Coronation Street here. I got priorities.
With regard to fault finding other people, you just better off keeping away from people that you fault find, or that you're more likely, you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And just
try
not to go near them, hide down in the woods.
Yeah, fault finding, that's a tough one.
Judgmental, yeah. And that's another huge thing that Irish people are wrapped up in, is judgment. And the world, I suppose, it comes with the matter of stuff, doesn't it? The whole judgment thing.
The whole not being able to see God in everyone, because you're just better off keeping well away from the people that you can't see God in.
I think once you do that, you can begin to see God in them. And that Buddhist meditation, what's it called, the specific one for the mindfulness meditation, where you focus on sending someone that you've had difficulties with love, and eventually they're not in your consciousness anymore, so in your, direct consciousness. So eventually you can see them as God, or, but when they're there, it's just very difficult to get to that point. So is that what you're kind of saying,
Chris? Mm-hmm. I think I was thinking about that the other day. Two things. I don't know whether it's a natural thing that came up from nowhere, but that we have no choice because we're already whole. We have no choice to become aware of that. If we don't, we suffer. It's just very simple for me. That came
up. That's right. I said that just before you came.
Yeah, we just have no choice. I got an email from somebody saying the power of choice, I said that's ridiculous. We don't have any choice in this. But I guess the thing is, I find the more aware I become, the stakes get higher. Because the illusion, you're less and less wanting to play in the illusion. So it kind of gets, in one sense, we're all one. But then it gets more difficult to hang around people who aren't aware.
Yep.
So it's kind of like the stakes get higher in your life. Is that what you're saying?
Are you copping out, though, by not confronting it? That's what I'm thinking. Am I copping out by staying down and keeping away from them and not having those thoughts? Or, what I mean?
No, according to the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna that it's better not to be around people who do not share your consciousness. Do not share your point of view. It's better to avoid them. Not being mean or nasty or judgmental. It's just, it's better not to be around them. Like, for example, if you're seeking peace and reflection and thoughtfulness, would we go down to the bar to do that and order a pint and seek peace and thoughtfulness? Now, it's not to say that you couldn't sit there over a pint and be a little bit philosophical, but I don't know that the bar is the best place to do that.
Maybe after a few drinks.
Because you're going to be surrounded by a bunch of people who are not thinking about that at all. So it's the antithesis of what you're trying to do. So you're better off being in a place that suits your goal.
Or you're happy.
I don't know about you guys, but my life changes. You know, it changes over the years. The more purified I become. Well, I mean, I lived in the ashram years ago, and I gave up everything, just everything. I didn't have any kind of sensory stimulation whatsoever. So I lived like that for a few years, and then I said, okay, this is great, but it's not that practical for me. So I have to go back into the world and do something in a practical manner and maintain my consciousness. But still, you go through all various kinds of changes over time. So, you know, just thinking about Clindy and I, since I met her and I moved to Ireland, you know, we've had periods where we were very social and be going out to dinners and things like that. Now, we're just not social. Here, this is how we're social. We throw our house open and people can come. We're being social. But if you invite us to a party, hard to say that we'll go. Because that's not really what we're in the mood for these days. So it's, you know, your life goes through different shifts and changes. I think that's okay. And the more purified you become, and it's no offense to the people, God bless them all, but what mentality do you want to be around? You know, do you want to go down to Ballymun and hang out with the locals and see what's going on there? I don't think you do. Why would you? There'd be little or nothing in common for you.
I also think the energy on the planet as well, you know, at the moment and will be up next year, is kind of creating that wanting to stay in the bubble and that you keep yourself focused and on your awareness to the self.
Well, absolutely. Well, we were talking about that too before you came, because it's all spiraling out of control right now.
Yeah.
The whole thing is falling apart and collapsing. And the silver lining in all that is that it's going, whatever you place your faith in, such as money and materialism and the stock market and the government and big corporations, whatever you place your money, your faith in, that must be tested. That's the rule, that's the law. It must be tested. So now that faith is being tested and things are falling apart, then where to turn? Where are people going to turn? To a different financial channel than the one they've been watching?
Somewhere else.
Yeah. Now is probably the best opportunity that I can think of in my entire lifetime, where there could be a quantum shift towards spirituality, because their materialism is failing miserably. I don't know how desperate things have to become. You know, there's people that are predicting, not me, that are predicting that it's going to get so bad that people in the big cities are going to start attacking each other. Because they won't have food.
I'm about to ruin that here.
Because they won't have food. They won't have the means to sustain themselves.
Who said that? Or do you want to talk to that?
Carl Denninger said that, who writes for some big financial paper. He did this all through financial analysis.
Because he was coming from the egoic mindset. That the ego would look at it that way.
Well, he wasn't a scaremonger.
No, he was
very level-headed in his analysis. He just said if A becomes B and B becomes C, then the next step will probably be this. That's how he said it.
You have to remember, though, that lots of people don't have any kind of interest in spirituality. So when their entire materialism is taken away from them, what are they going to turn to is complete anger because they can't cope with it. They have no mechanisms.
Well, anger and desperation.
And desperation as well.
Well, I'm hoping that enough people have awoken your pockets like Miguel or Buddhism or Hinduism or Vedic and, you know, all the pockets of people around the world and ashram to somehow balance out the energy for that.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't mean that there aren't going to be some degree of destruction taking place. I mean, things that won't... Elements, people, systems that refuse to adapt and change will either be left out in the cold or must be killed off or must die, don't they? When you can't keep up to what's going on and you can't adapt fast enough to your world changing around you, what's going to happen to you? Do you not think there's going to be X amount of people that will be affected by such a thing? So, I mean, I don't know how there can't be some death, loss, or destruction in it all, because that's part of what happens in the material world. Always.
Yeah, desolation, all this,
it's called autumn and winter. Mm-hmm. It always happens.
It's about capitalism imploding from the center.
Right.
Exactly. Through, I kind of, there's a part of me that is just very, I'm really quite excited to see how all of this is going to...
Exactly. That's my point.
Change and, but is that being naive to the... suffering that's actually going to happen for that to happen?
Well, you know, it's good to be empathetic.
Suffering's been going on.
But, you know, there's always going to be suffering. I don't want to see anybody suffer.
But suffering is such a relative term.
Exactly.
It's completely relative.
Exactly. You know, I don't like to see a bee die. I like bees. Mm-hmm. And when I see a bee die... I sort of feel sort of sad to see the bee die, but you know, that's it. You know, when I see a person die, I feel about the same. Because I know they're just giving up their change of clothes for a new one. Mm-hmm. It's not that big a deal. No, I don't like to see them suffer, but we need to go where we need to go. In other words, we have to get to where we have to get to. And there, if this is not a time for a quantum shift to take place in our lifetime, I don't know what is. You know, you're seeing it all around you. Everything is falling apart.
Mm-hmm. Just the 2009 thing, the financial thing. Can you, or would you like to develop on that a little bit? Like, is this now the kind of, is it reaching to the peak? And I think
this year, 2009, is going to be the most difficult year.
Not 2010, but it's still.
Well, it goes until March of 2010.
Okay.
But Jupiter moves away from Rahu. The whole financial thing is happening because Jupiter, mm-hmm. money, finances, economy, etc., is with Rahu. Mm-hmm. And as I pointed out in those articles, when Jupiter was with Rahu, you had the Great Depression, 1929 stock market crash. You had the 1987 Black Monday. Then you had Jupiter with Saturn, and you had 2001, the 9/11 thing where the U.S. economy also shut down almost completely. I was there at the time. So I know what happened. So these are all examples of what happens at this kind of juncture, conjunction of planets. So that's what we have right now. And that goes for the coming year. Jupiter moves into Aquarius over the summer, May, June, July. Maybe things get better. Don't know. Then he goes retrograde, backward motion, back into Capricorn with Rahu. That should be even worse, I think. So, August, September, October. Then December, he goes forward into Aquarius for the rest of the coming year, all of 2010. Jupiter in Aquarius is considered to be one of the prime positions for spiritual awakening. May, June, July.
May, June, July.
Of this year. And then from December 19th this year until December of 2010. Jupiter in Aquarius. That should not be a difficult financial time. However, you know, depending on how much unravels and how much falls apart, I mean, some new systems have to be put into place. Now, how long does that take?
It takes years, but when you think about it, the banking system, people who work in those funds, banking, like, they can't actually do anything. They're not qualified to do anything except play around with other people's money.
And some of them aren't qualified to do that.
They're not doctors, they're not architects, they're not artists. They're not teachers.
Okay, well, that's a good point, you see. I said...
So it's like, what are they there for? You know what I mean? It's like...
Well, they're supposed to manage people's money.
But...
If there's no money, I don't know what they'll do. We were sitting in India, and we turned on the news. We're watching the news on TV. We turned the sound down. We muted it. I said, okay, now look at the pictures on TV. They're showing you a city in the midst of this financial crisis. So what does that look like to you? She says, it looks like life going on as usual. I said, exactly. And if this wasn't a financial crisis, if this was 2 years ago and you were looking at the same picture, what would it look like? It would look exactly the same. People were going about their business as if nothing was happening, because you know why? Life goes on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there may be this and that happening, but life still goes on.
You haven't taken the weather into consideration.
Yeah, well, I was... Yeah, the weather's there, too.
Yeah.
So...
Mother Earth or whatever is going to happen with that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's another symptom of the shift.
Could you just wipe out, you know, could do anything to take us all away in a blimp.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't... Myself, I don't worry about such things.
I'm worried. It's just
you know. So you mean I get to get out of the material world? Yay! I've always wanted to get out of the material world. So it's too.
Well, I know it's just a strong death wish.
But I don't. You see, I don't have a death wish at all. Mm-hmm. I don't have this morbid fixation. I just know that down here it's dense, it's gross, it's unrefined. It's unpolished. It's ignorance. It's lacks enlightenment. There's so much darkness and cruelty. I'm not all that keen on it.
Well, I think Trevor, that you die, the whole description of spiritual enlightenment is when you die before you die. So I think what I'm hearing from you is you say you've already died from the whole illusion, but you're still here in body. That's all.
Yeah, well, I've mostly died from the illusion. I think I'm still clinging to one or two of the strings, you know. There's got to be some enjoyment here for me.
Ascension is waiting right there. But it is, and that's what I'm hearing. And what I'm hearing is perfect, because it's to die completely to all the attachments, but still be here, be in the world and not out. So
yeah.
It is a death.
Well, it is a death, but it's not like a morbid death wish. I'm not trying to crash my motorcycle at high speed.
Yeah.
I don't have a motorcycle. All right. I was going to read a little bit of the
amazing.
Yeah,
it has to be good for your eyes.
Well, how much am I reading?
You read all day.
I read all day. There you go. There it is. This is chapter 5 of the Bhagavad Gita, the conversation between Krishna and Arjuna. This chapter is called Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga means the yoga of
action.
Action, right? Work, effort. Is verse 23. Shakno ti haiva ya sodhum praksharira vimokshanat kama krodho bhavang vegam sa yukta sa sukhi naraha. Translation. Before giving up this present body, if one is able to tolerate the urges of the material senses and check the force of desire and anger, or of attraction and repulsion, he is a yogi and becomes happy in this world. So, when you are not disturbed by attraction, attached to the things that you're drawn to, and you're not disturbed by the things that repel you, that you dislike, then you reach a balanced state. Purport. If one wants to make steady progress on the path of self-realization, he must try to control the forces of the material senses. There are the forces of talk, forces of anger, forces of mind, forces of the stomach, forces of the genitals, and forces of the tongue. One who's able to control the forces of all these different senses and the mind is called a Goswami. Swami means one who is in control, and go means senses, one who controls his senses, or a Swami or a Goswami. Such Goswamis live strictly controlled lives and forego altogether the forces of the senses. Can you spend one day, one single day, and not succumb to any of the 5 senses and their urges? So that means you fast, take no food, no water, maybe a little bit of water so you don't die.
Die in a day.
I just don't want to be held responsible here. He told me to, Your Honor.
You don't die. People have this idea. You
don't I know. You don't die.
You wouldn't die without water for a few days.
Yeah, I know. I'm sort of teasing. So, no food, no water, no sex, no sexual thought. No, whatever pleases your touch.
No talking.
No talking.
No yoga practice.
No yoga practice is fine. No talking nonsense. No focusing on mundane or nonsense topics. In Sanskrit, it's called prajalpa. Prajalpa is talking nonsense about,
gossip.
Gossip is called gramya kata. Kata means speech, and gramya means connected to the village. Village talk. Gramya katha. None of that. Only Bhagavat katha. Only connected to God. So, not enjoying or indulging any of your senses. Give that a try. I invite you. Give that a try for a day. Some of you probably would do it no problem whatsoever. Happy to do it. Others would struggle with it. Or struggle with one of them anyway, whatever one that may be. Okay, to continue. Material desires, when unsatiated, generate anger, frustration. And thus, the mind, eyes, and chest become agitated. Therefore, one must practice to control them before one gives up this material body.
What do they mean by chest?
Okay. That's what they mean. One who can do this is understood to be self-realized and is thus happy in the state of self-realization. It is the duty of the transcendentalist to try strenuously to control attraction and repulsion. So, that's your point, more or less, the verse was. So we can be liberated even in this body. You know it's, you can think of whatever you used to be attached to or driven by or addicted to. Earlier in your life, think of that thing, and you don't even think about it anymore. It's a non-issue. You don't indulge in it, you don't think about it, you don't behave like it anymore. You're not known for it, you're no longer famous for it among your friends. Sounds like that. It's getting past it, getting over it, getting beyond it.
I think that's the most difficult in my experience when I was becoming more and more aware was your friends expecting you to be the way that you used to be.
Yeah.
And then stepping into that space and knowing you've changed and then you're watching them not knowing what to do with it. It's a kind of a very strange experience.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a grief and a loss at the same time because, you know, it's a strange experience.
Yeah, and unless they change, it can never be the...
No.
Well, it's also a little bit disarming when you meet an old friend and they haven't changed at all. You go, oh my God, you know. Yeah. This is how they behave when they were 16 and they still behave in this manner.
So that's when the stakes get a little higher. The more I feel, this is my interpretation, the more aware you become with people around you sometimes and people that know you. Because you know internally your perceptions have shifted.
Yeah.
And that no longer entertains you anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very hard to be around, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Very hard. To be around men making sexual innuendo jokes. it's very difficult to be around that. I mean, there was a time in my life when I made sexual innuendo jokes, but I was a teenager at the time. So, I don't mind if somebody makes a sexual innuendo joke, but if you're sitting around with somebody and they keep doing it constantly, I'm only using that as an example. But the energy just drains out of you. You can feel it. It's sucked right out of you when you're around people like that. who are, their energy is kind of all over the place. And they're saying so much, but they haven't said anything. They haven't said anything of with any meaning at all. But so much is coming out. It's very hard to be around that.
Eating up your energy for sure.
Yeah. And eating up their own. They're wasting their life breath. But they're entertained, so.
Times, like, all of the, like, kind of thinking about philosophy and chanting minds and everything, it becomes very exhausting. I mean, it's very beautiful, it's all very.
Oh, well, no, you have to take it in the right measure.
Yeah.
So sometimes you may need a break from all that.
Yeah.
And you may need to go dancing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need what you need. I don't know what you need. But you can't artificially force it on yourself.
No,
and you only have the ability to absorb so much anyway, whatever it is you're doing, you know.
It's more of it needs the time to assimilate.
Yeah.
You need to take a step back.
Absolutely.
Allow to, you know, you to go through experiences that you can actually learn from this and then come back to it or whatever. Sometimes it's just nice to hang out with people who just don't even think about it because,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. I mean, if it's what works for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like to watch stand-up comedy. I don't watch it that much, but the other day I got on YouTube and I laughed my head off. You know, all they're doing is making fun of this, that, and the other, but I find it very entertaining. Didn't have much to do with God, but I laughed and had fun. You know.
I think.
Yeah, well, laughter. Yeah, laughter is good. You do what you need.
You also have to ground it. You know, it's not going to be all.
Right.
You have to.
Right.
Dancing can bring that down.
Yeah. Well, dancing is. It puts you in your body.
Mm-hmm.
It's physical. You know. One of my tendencies is to be too much in my head. In case you hadn't figured that out about me, I can get very much in my head. So
that's why we have to get him a horse.
We go on the horse and we ride. It takes me right out of my head immediately to have this powerful beast underneath me. And my balance means everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it puts me right in my body. It's great. Really enjoy it. So it's whatever works for you.
Yeah, I think in my little journey to myself, I went through all that. Oh my God, I would go bring myself right to the extreme, you know, the absolute, and then I would go, I'm just going clubbing. And so I would just go to a love-hate relationship with it.
Yeah.
Hate, like, I can't do this.
And you go and do the extremes of
and
clubbing,
I just would go to the extremes. You know, maybe 10 years ago, and it's just, and then as time has gone on, I don't feel the need to.
Well, this is it. After a while,
you don't feel the need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I got together initially with Kalindi and we started to live together, you know, I have a lot of spiritual music and chanting and stuff that I like to listen to. And she had some her own self that she liked to listen to. But I'm a big world music fan. I like to listen to music from all different countries. So somehow or other we gravitated out of my listening to world music. And we listened to chanting and mantras. That's what we listened to all day long, every day. And we've been doing that now for about 5-6 years. No, I mean, if you want to play something, you want us to hear, we'll listen to it. And that's about it. that's what we listen to. All right, so let's do some meditation. Oh, let me first do this. Does anybody have any stories, experiences, anything you want to share of the personal nature, anything you've had seen, done, realized, God in your life?
Yes, I have.
All right.
Because I said it in the beginning of the evening that I had lost quite a bit of work within the space of 1 week, and it's really unusual because a lot of these are jobs that have, you know, the other teaching positions that I've had for years. A year ago, that would have been the end of the world for me. Now it's not. You know, I would have been like stressed, how am I going to replace that job, where am I going to, you know, find the income, whatever. But now I'm just more less attached to it. Do you know what I mean?
Very good. Anybody else?
Since I've come back from India, I keep dreaming that I'm on long haul flights.
Well, you know why that is, don't you?
I'm in the cockpit, or I'm helping people who are really sort of not able to deal with the turbulence, and I'm constantly travelling to do. I'm constantly traveling to different countries. I have a day in each country, and then I move, and I'm constantly moving, and I'm quite happy.
Definitely a flight attendant dream.
We got bumped up again.
Did
you? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got bumped up on the way and on the way back. We bumped us up to business class.
Wow. Did you ask or just happened?
Just happened.
Just happened.
Luxury.
Both times.
Yeah, a few luxuries happening there.
I'm sorry, Catherine, do we
bypass it?
Did you finish that?
Well, I don't know the same thing, it's because I'm actually think I'm an air hostess.
No, I'm teasing you about that part. I mean, how many of those long haul flights have you actually been on in your lifetime? Lots?
No, only two.
That's probably why.
I found the experience really bizarre.
Good, bad, no good?
Bizarre, because I was explaining to Raymond and Flesh, just because it's like you're in a plane for 10 hours and I watch so many films.
Yeah.
And the fact the plane doesn't ever stop to refuel except for Paris. And I'm going, how do you stay up in the sky for that long? And it's like as if it's a dream, it's not really happening. And oh, and I arrive, I'm in Paris. Maybe the soul is taking
kind of weird commitments.
Yeah. And maybe the soul.
Yeah, and they close all the blinds anyways.
This is where you go.
Yeah. I know, it's an amazing thing, really. Well, what I think actually happens is you're flying at a rate that your physical body technically is not meant to go at.
Yeah.
So your molecules are actually disintegrating. And it's like you have a slipstream of your molecules behind you trying to catch up to you. You know, like an exhaust, or what do you call that, behind you. No, I think that's it.
Yeah.
And then you land, and your molecules are still coming up to try and catch you. I think that's really what happens, something like that. Before you, and that's also what the phenomenon of jet lag is about, is reintegrating the molecules. Because we're humans and we're meant to be grounded. Not flying at those speeds. It's about as vata imbalanced as you could get, you know, in terms of Ayurveda. Air imbalance. All right. So let's do a little meditation. Why not just use my little box? My electric tambura.
Oh.
All right. Get in your meditative pose, please. And stay awake. Close your eyes. Breathe. Relax. And let go. Deeply, deeply relax. Allow the stress, tension, fear, and apprehension to drain from your body. Totally, completely relax, breathe, and let go. High above, a beautiful beam of radiant, pearl-white light comes down from the heavens. Down, down, all the way down. Entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms and legs, out the bottom of your feet, into the earth below. Breathe, relax, and let go. All right. You're in a boat. On a gently moving river. And you're paddling the boat gently. On one side of the river, you see what? And how do you feel about what you see? On the other side of the river, you see something quite different. What is it? How do you feel about what you see? You need to make a decision which shore, which bank of the river you're going to head toward and why. Once having made that decision, you begin to paddle toward your chosen bank. Then the other person in the boat says what to you? And what happens? That's the meditation. Continue until you've finished all of the steps. When you're done, you can return to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace. And open your eyes when you're ready. like my my tambura. It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Om Tat Sat. Hare Krishna.